RSB Radio with Robert Scott Bell.
You are listening to the Robert Scott Bell Show.
The Robert Scott the Bell
Robert
Show.
Scott Bell Show.
Vladimir Putin has just addressed the Russian people moments ago, announcing what Putin called the start of a military special operation, in his words, to demilitarize Ukraine.
Today I'm authorizing additional strong sanctions and new limitations on what can be exported to Russia. This is going to impose severe costs on the Russian economy, both immediately and over time. We have purposely designed these sanctions to maximize a long-term impact on Russia and to minimize the impact on the United States and our allies.
Well, that's it. We're beginning the Robert Scott Bell Show. Apparently, Biden and his effete way of talking to Putin and Russia did nothing to stop whatever Russia decided it wanted to do with Ukraine. And of course, we've talked and heard so much about the fact that he's more concerned about the borders of Ukraine than our own borders here in the United States. Welcoming back into the fold here for an intense discussion this hour about this and a number of other topics. It's Jonathan E. Mord with the Sacred Fire of Liberty, remembering our foundational principles here in America are unique on this planet, and Russia doesn't share those ideals, nor apparently does Canada when it comes to freedom. And you've got a great article about the rights in Canada versus the rights of Americans in America coming up. But I do want to open with, gosh darn it, I hate having to talk about war. I mean, that's the last resort, and it's happening. Where are we in this, and what has Biden done to accelerate this from an actual happening?
I think the reality is that when you are weak and when you are lack credibility and when you are interested in a woke agenda for the United States, even at the expense of the American military and even at the expense of fossil fuel backbone of the American economy, the result is that the rest of the world thinks you're a fool and thinks that your nation is engaged in activities that are self-destructive. And what we see from Biden are a whole series of events that led to this. It's Biden's fault. When he came into office, the first thing he did was issue an executive order that eliminated the Keystone XL pipeline and that froze all of the leases on natural gas over federal lands and federal waters, and made clear it was his intention to completely eliminate fossil fuels from America. In other words, the backbone of the American economy, he was going to destroy. He made that clear. So when China looks at this, when Russia looks at this, they cannot believe that the United States is going to destroy itself. And yet he proceeded with that mission. And then you see that the United States destroys its domestic production capabilities and limits them and relies on foreign sources more than ever before, and indeed relies on Russian oil and gas as never before and pays a premium for it, enriching Russia like it has never been enriched before. Then in addition, you see the United States authorizing the green light for the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which Russia cannot believe. The United States unilaterally is allowing us to proceed with acquiring an even greater share of wealth from the West through the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Then, in addition, you have the ignominious retreat from Afghanistan, where Biden left Americans, left billions and billions of dollars worth of military equipment, bases, intelligence gathering equipment and data, and even allowed the release of American terrorist prisoners from the jails they were in into the society, and created the largest terrorist and most sophisticated military terrorist operation in the Taliban in the world. They cannot believe that the United States would do that, but there it did it. And so then you have this proof of weakness Then when Putin begins his activities of assembling forces on the border of the Ukraine, there is no action from the Biden administration to revitalize our domestic oil production capability and cut off Russia, to cut off Russia even from Nord Stream 2. At first, he wasn't even talking about that. And then the idea is economic sanctions, but only after he invades. Okay. So Putin looks at this and says, only economic sanctions? They aren't even going to put more than 8 or 10,000 American soldiers into the NATO nations that are bordering the Ukraine. They aren't even going to give the Ukrainians any real powerful military hardware to prevent or to delay our destruction of Ukraine. Then he decides, okay, I'm going to go. Then he decides, I'll go into the Donbass area. He goes into there and he sees, again, no real opposition. He's starting the movement towards the end, no real opposition. Well, why not take all of the Ukraine then? And so he's going to take all of the Ukraine. Now, China's sitting there looking at Taiwan since 1948 and wanting to take Taiwan. Taiwan has no military of any substance.
And well, so, it's wholly reliant on the United States, is it not? To protect from China. So if China watches this, is I think where you were going, and sees what he's done with Putin, is like, we could just walk right in. Biden's not going to do a thing. The question I have, Jonathan, is like, no, but why? Here's the question. I don't perceive that Biden is in the driver's seat, not since he's been president. That's my perspective. Maybe that some people think that's crazy. I think there are people tapping him on the shoulder, nudging him, giving him a script. What is the purpose for weakening America's place in the world to such a significant degree? I mean, if we go back to,
one other thing, Robert, which is the other thing that they are absolutely flabbergasted about, that is Putin and Xi Jinping in China, is to see a country destroy itself by opening without restriction its southern border and allowing gangs in, allowing the fentanyl that the Chinese are making to destroy the United States in, and causing the United States people from 18 to 48 in the United States, the leading cause of death is
fentanyl. Correct. Yeah, we just covered that yesterday. Leading cause of death for people under 50 in the United States now is overdose deaths. And so
you have drug traffickers, sex traffickers. They effectively turned over America's immigration policy and system to the cartels in Mexico. And then you have also all these people who are terrorists coming in through our southern border. Periodically, they pick up somebody and, oh, gee, that person happens to be a terrorist on the terrorist watch list. I mean, you've got a person who is giving over our country to our enemies, to criminals, to people engaged in drug trafficking and so forth. And so when the Russians look at this and when the Chinese look at this, they say, this is a nation that's sick. They're engaged in self-destructive activities. Mm-hmm. They cannot even defend themselves. How could they possibly act against us? Let's go in. And so Putin decided that this is the opportune moment. He went through the whole Trump administration. He's been there for 8 years in the Crimea, looking at the rest of the Ukraine, saying, I want to get it. Every time he moved in that direction, Trump said, boom, I'm going to hit you. And then you got Biden coming in, and he's just this jellyfish. And he meets with Biden in person, Putin. And he realizes this guy,
he's not even there.
This guy is a person who is really out of touch. His agenda is climate change. He's talking to Putin about climate change.
Right. Jonathan, I have to ask. I mean, maybe I'm asking you to speculate, or I don't know. Maybe you know more than me on this. But like I said, I don't think anybody's home in Biden. I don't. So who's running him, and why would they want to destroy the United States unless they're working, like we've seen in Canada, for a globalist agenda that is to weaken purposefully the United States of America to make it part of one world order, per se, right?
I mean, filled his administration with people who are far leftists, and he's filled his administration with people who are apologists for the United States, who believe that the nuclear deal with Iran should be revivified such that we assure them of getting nuclear weapons. We don't stand in the way, that we want to befriend those people who want to slit our throats. I mean, these are the people that are there. We know this is how they operate. This is John Kerry. This is their climate change czar. He was Secretary of State, remember, in the Obama years. He is now the climate czar.
Right.
Well, he's sending him all over the world. And he's telling people who don't want to hear the message that, the United States drank the swill. We now believe climate change is real. We think that the whole universe is going to end in 2 years. Oh, nothing we do will affect that outcome, by the way. The Chinese could change it, but we don't want to bother the Chinese. We don't put any pressure on the Chinese. Right. No. Leave them alone.
Jonathan,
this everywhere in everything they do.
Yeah.
Look, they made climate change. They made the national priority for every agency and the Department of Defense.
Well, that and hashtag woke politics in terms of, in the military, caring more about what's gender pronouns to use as opposed to defending the country when needed. Jonathan, again, I've concluded here that those in charge right now in this Biden administration are overtly, not covertly, not secretively, destroying the country from within, weakening it so that it can what? What's the inevitability? Become part of a global community, not under a Declaration of Independence or a Constitution that we had written and ratified going back to our ancestry, but one that is part of, a communist world agenda to make everybody what? Own nothing and like it. Right. This is the WEF. This is IMF, World Bank control of the entire planet. This is not a hidden agenda anymore. And it seems like that there's very few, if any, in the Democratic Party are fighting for America in this case.
Recognize this other very salient and disturbing fact. When Putin meets with Biden, when Xi Jinping meets with Biden, who do they know Biden to be? They know Biden is that guy who has a son named Hunter, who will sell any amount of access to the most intimate parts of the government, including to Joe Biden, who is a willing participant in it, from the enemies of the United States, giving access to people in power to do things for the enemies of the United States and to pay millions and millions of dollars to the Biden family to bring this about. So what they see in Biden is this mentally deficient human being who is a shill for them. So when they look at him, they think, well, you can be bought. We bought you before. We'll buy you again. Oh, you're a wimp. We've never had a problem with you. You didn't even want to strike Osama bin Laden when the opportunity was.
Yeah.
You are not a person who has a backbone. You're a person who's a weak-willed person. We are going to crush you. You're going to be turned into soup. We are not going to have you stand in our way of our global ambitions to take over this planet. And so let's test it out. Test number one, Ukraine. Test number two, Taiwan. What is test number three going to be? They're not going to stop.
Are they coming for Mexico and Canada? They're apparently very influential in Canada and investing around the world.
What they can successfully do is render it incapable of posing any opposition other countries by bribery, by giving them investments that turn into demands, which is what China's program has been all throughout Asia. And doing that same thing. I mean, Putin is looking at the Ukraine as a foothold. I get in there, I get the Ukraine, I suppress all the opposition, I make it a puppet. And his goal, he said this many times, is to reestablish the former Soviet Union, to take all the Eastern European states that are now in NATO and bring them back.
Yeah, sure.
His control.
Jonathan, I got to ask you, too, in terms of the history, because you are a student of history and written extensively about it. How we got here is not just Biden showed up and this happened, even though that's a big part of what we're witnessing today, but the indebtedness to China, the debt-based economy that we have established over many, many now generations, if you will, made us vulnerable, right? How many billions and, I don't know, trillions of debt we hold puts us in a vulnerable, weaker position. And whether it be indebtedness to China or otherwise, we have really established a system of economics that is not viable long term. And we're dealing with that as well.
what really caused us to be vulnerable was the switch that Henry Kissinger and Nixon orchestrated in our view of China, which was to say that this country, which is a communist country and is intent, has always been intent on our destruction and elimination, is nevertheless capable of being softened by introducing free market economics. And so long as we use our economic power to introduce free market economics to China, it will inevitably turn pro-capitalistic. That blew up. That didn't work. And so then what has happened? Well, you have this view, which is really ridiculous. The reset, for example, with China, that Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton introduced during the Obama years, where she actually brought a button, you remember, to Putin, and they were going to reset the relationship. How stupid is that? He's laughing his way, you know, all over the place with that. And what they really did was say, okay, you give us these things. And when that will show that you have no hostile intentions. Actually, the same program he's doing now. You stop arming your allies in Eastern Europe who are part of NATO. Stop putting munitions there. Withdraw. Eliminate the opposition. Certainly. And, you know, what could Biden do? Let me tell you what Biden could do. You want to change the picture on the world? This is what you do. If you're a serious president of the United States, a commander in chief dedicated to protecting our interests, I'll tell you what you do. You put nuclear weapons in Eastern Europe under American control. You put Americans in there, you put nuclear weapons in there, and those are defensive, but Putin gets the idea. You're not going to roll over these countries. You put in American forces in there, you put in American hardware in there, and you show that we are not going to allow you, Putin, to take over Europe. You're not going to do it. You're not going to take Eastern Europe, and you're not going to hold hostage these countries that are aligned with us through NATO.
Sure. Jonathan, I do have another question about that.
For China, for China and Taiwan, is you increase Americans' military presence, particularly through the use of nuclear submarines around Taiwan, and you make it clear to Xi Jinping that if you attack Taiwan, you are actually engaged in a broader war against the free peoples of Taiwan and Japan. Because let me tell you, they take Taiwan, their next interest is going to be neutering Japan. Mm-hmm. First of all, separating it from its alliances with the United States, isolating it, and then destroying it. Because they've never gotten over the fact that the Chinese were invaded by Japan in World War II. The Chinese still recall Japanese occupation of Manchuria.
Sure.
They resent it, and they want to destroy China. I mean, Japan.
Going back into the defense of Europe scenario after World War II, the United States, the people and or indebtedness in our, you know, how we have worked under since Bretton Woods 2 broke down, of course, Bretton Woods 1 and 2 and the gold standard connected, disconnected from the dollar, right? Then we just printed, and we paid for the defense of Western Europe. We went into debt for them, and then they were able to establish what we call more socialistic programs in their own countries because they didn't have much of their budget put to defense because the American people, whether they wanted to or not, were defending Europe. Are you suggesting we go back in at $30 trillion of debt? I mean, just a sincere question. I'm asking about the economics of how do we do this now? It's not like then with a lower debt. Wasn't great, but now it's ridiculous, teetering on the edge of who can keep this up?
Well, this is something that requires the participation of all members of NATO. In other words, if we had a leader as a president of the United States like we had with Donald Trump, he would go over to Europe right now and he would be saying, all right, you're going to pony up money for the defense of your area. We certainly have the role of having the most sophisticated military among all of us, and we're happy to take those intercontinental ballistic missiles and deposit them in Eastern Europe as a defense under American control. We won't allow that to be taken by you. But the financing of this operation, you, Europe, are going to pay for with us. We're not going to shoulder this burden alone because we're saving your hide. And so Trump will do that. Trump will be very direct about that. And as far as our economy is concerned, if anything we are being told by the necessity of developing hypersonic missiles to replenish our nuclear, to complement our nuclear defense in light of the developments of hypersonic missiles by China and Russia, mm-hmm. and and to modernize our military and to protect our intellectual property from being stolen by the Chinese and turned into military hardware. All of this requires significant financial investments on the defense side by the United States, just to protect the United States itself. And in order to do that, you have to have a robust economy. And what Biden is doing with his socialism, right, and with his destruction of the fossil fuel backbone of the American economy is ensuring our economic destruction.
Decline, yeah, decline and destruction, yeah.
Inflation will destroy the middle class. He's ensuring that the necessary means by which we can develop these munitions and ensure all that will not be there, because he's going to impoverish the nation. Mm-hmm. We've got to turn to a supply side economy. We have to break down regulation that is inhibiting a supply side economy. We need to lower corporate taxes. We need to lower individual taxes. We need to turn the free market loose, and we need to get government out of blocking the growth and development of a free market that can finance our defense.
And it's not likely to occur while you have the Democrats running all three branches of government with very little toe tapping, slowing down this agenda. I think, 2022 with the midterms coming, of course, I see almost the freak out on the Democrat side because of their draconian lockdowns, shutdowns, mask and vaccine mandates. They're trying to reverse them very quickly. But let's take a moment to watch Biden's response to questions about his policy to see where he is thinking regarding what you have said, because it's probably quite different. So, Super Don, go ahead and play that Biden clip.
President Biden, if sanctions cannot stop President Putin, what penalty can?
I didn't say sanctions couldn't stop him.
You've been talking about the threat of these sanctions for several weeks now.
Yes, but the threat of the sanctions and imposing the sanctions and seeing the effect of the sanctions are two different things. They're two different things. And we're now going to begin to see the effect of the sanctions.
And what will that do? How will that change his mindset here, given he's
attacking
Ukraine?
Because it will so weaken his country that he'll have to make a very, very difficult choice as to whether to continue to move toward being a second-rate power or, in fact, respond.
You said in recent weeks that big nations cannot bluff when it comes to something like this. You recently said that the idea of personally sanctioning President Putin was on the table. Is that a step that you're prepared to take? And if not,
it's not a bluff. It's on the table.
Sanctioning President Putin?
Yes.
Why not sanction him today, sir?
Mr. President?
Why not sanction him today?
Well, there you go. I don't know what he was actually saying about sanctions imposed versus threatened versus actually. And really, is in Russia such a weak position that sanctions that he's claiming Biden would do or is doing is really going to bring them to their knees at this point?
Well, first of all, he appears weak. He's irresolute. He doesn't have a specific game plan. He looks like he's vacillating from one position to another. I'll hurt him personally, meaning Putin. Will you do it today? He just stares off into space. This is not the kind of leadership you need in a crisis. This is the kind of thing that suggests to your enemy that they're exactly right in anticipating weakness. Not only that, let me tell you this. I would certainly expect that after Putin devastates the Ukraine and has suppressed all opposition and has his own puppets in place, that if he were to approach Biden and say to Biden, if you relieve all these sanctions, I won't pose a threat to NATO. He would just drop all the sanctions, just like he does with Iran. Drop everything. Nope. And it wouldn't require anything from him, anything at all from him. That's Biden's pattern. They know that. Mm-hmm. They know that this and furthermore, there's a big factor that they're not talking about, and that is China investing in Russia to finance the shortfalls that come from these economic things. He knows that, look, we're dealing with two communists who've just formed an alliance and are intent on using that alliance to destroy their enemies, to go to war. And so they are going to help each other in each of these situations. And the help is going to be lopsided from China to Russia, because China's got this massive economy and that's under totalitarian control. Mm-hmm. And they can help Russia in innumerable ways. They can buy all the Russian oil.
Yeah, so, Jonathan, what you've said there is so important to understand. And I think how did the Democrats not see this nonsense of, yeah, we'll sanction them and they'll get on their knees and beg to not be sanctioned? As I could see, obviously, China has plenty of capacity to prop up Russia at this point with all that they have and hold, that it's a losing proposition. And I'm not encouraged by what I see. And I'm not also a big fan of war. I am also a big fan of showing that you're capable of defending yourself, because you can't be naive on this planet to think that if you show weakness that it would not be exploited. That's unfortunately the nature of man on this planet. So you have to be prepared to defend yourself. But that doesn't mean we all want to go to war all the time, or, you know,
none of us wants to go to war. That's the last thing in the world we ever want. We want to avoid war at all costs. We simply don't want to allow that to happen. Now, we aren't willing to give up our freedom for war. We're not willing to deprive ourselves of our fundamental principles that make us a republic. We aren't going to do any of that to avoid war. But we certainly are willing to use peace through strength as a form of deterrence. And that's the way you deter these enemies from going to war. You make yourself so strong, so invincible, that the prospect of going to war isn't there. Let me tell you, they've so depleted. After the Cold War, our presidents, all the way up through Obama, have depleted the extent to which we have both domestic resources to defend ourselves and also through NATO. NATO has approximately 100 intercontinental ballistic missiles under American control, principally, some under the control of other nations, but largely to be delivered by air power. And we don't have anything sufficient to stand up against an assault on Europe. Now, I'm not saying that's imminent, but I'm saying we must provide for it to create the deterrent. In other words, again, we have to invest in our strength, in our defense,
yes,
in order to minimize possibility of war.
But if you're destroying our economy at home, like Biden and that crew are, you have no ability to do it, right? You destroy the essential engine of the economy. And of course, sanctions, which I don't think are going to impact Russia really, when you talked about the Russia-China alliance, is only going to hurt those businesses in America that build and produce things that they would export to countries, including Russia.
In fact, his sanctions will most likely harm American enterprise.
Correct.
Will Russian enterprise. And the reason, again, is that to the extent that there's injury to Russia, it's going to be ameliorated largely by China.
By China, yeah.
Because it's in China's interest to have an aggressive Russia.
Yeah.
China wants Russia to threaten and intimidate and coerce Eastern Europe. It would love the opportunity to have Russia reform itself into a Soviet Union. Now, at some point, they're going to hate the Russians. If Russia actually grows, they're going to end up hating it. But right now, Russia is like a terrorist group. They want to finance it. They want to promote it. They want to promote
to weaken America again. We talk about that. Look, this is a bummer discussion. I really don't like having to do this discussion with you, although it's important. We got to put our big boy pants on when it comes to the planet we're on. If we're going to defend liberty, we have to be strong. And part of that strength we talk about is the economy and the freedom to basically innovate, create, use imagination that comes from God to do wonderful things and remove the obstacles for the free flow of amazing things, which, guess what, government is really good at getting in the way of. That's what our founders knew, and they try to limit it. Right now, it seems to be behaving as if it has unlimited ability to do whatever it wants, and that's a great danger. Now, what we have is a good news scenario. There are good things happening in our country, and right now, the thing that's coming up this very weekend that Jonathan and I are participating in is the Trinity Health Freedom Expo. The virtual summit version, which means all that we did in early October is available for you this weekend and then some. There are a lot of new presentations that were not there that are uploaded and you can watch, and the live panel discussion that I'll be moderating with Jonathan Ebord, Diane Miller, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and Professor Dr. Brian Hooker. What have we learned in the last 2 years of COVID? You know, whether it comes to medical and scientific issues, whether it comes to legal, lawful, constitutional issues, we've got you covered. You don't want to miss this. It's 3 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday, and I'm showing everybody up on screen. You go to TrinityHealthFreedomExpo.com. Through the Whova app, you can download, watch live, or you have 6 months to watch it, even if you're busy this weekend. No excuses. $40. It's well worth it. And the Whova app is available on your iOS. I think that's iPhones and Android phones. See me, I'm not so good with technology. I sort of get it slowly.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
There is no doubt that water is good for you. And thanks to breakthrough technology and recent studies on the effects of hydrogen water, it's growing in popularity. But what's the difference between hydrogen water and plain water? Let's dive deeper into the molecular makeup of plain water. Water molecules have one part oxygen and two parts hydrogen. And when they combine, the two molecules turn into a liquid. But what makes hydrogen water different? Echo machines are designed to dissolve more hydrogen gas into your water, making your normal water into hydrogen water with no pH change. In contrast to plain water, you can see that we now have H2O molecules as well as two parts hydrogen gas. These additional H2 molecules are unbonded and remain in gas form. So, why is it better to have hydrogen gas dissolved in your water? Hundreds of scientific studies, including the studies by Medical Gas Research on hydrogen-rich water, have helped us understand that there are many biological advantages of drinking hydrogen water, such as neurological benefits that help improve brain function and boost energy throughout the day. In addition to these benefits, dissolved molecular hydrogen has been shown to reduce oxidative stress and inflammation, which are the leading causes of disease. Now you can drink with confidence, knowing the difference between hydrogen water and plain water. Like and follow Synergy Science to stay up to date with the latest news on hydrogen water and other ways to achieve your health advantage.
In the health world through the power of radio. It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
In the midst of all of this, that's the good news. We get together and we get to talk freely about our experiences, what we've learned, and empowering other people to see things maybe they don't see yet, because we've been doing deep dives for the last 2 years on this subject from, again, medical, scientific, and legal perspectives. And boy, I think this is going to be a very important panel that we're a part of this weekend, Jonathan.
I agree. And a lot of those speeches that were delivered earlier that they're going to run again, they really present a huge opportunity for people, because they'll see that the things you predicted, the things that I predicted, actually came to pass, which is quite interesting in the short interval between those speeches being given in the present. Yeah. And then they get the live panel too. It's quite a bundle of good things that people would really be sorely disappointed, I think, if they care about these issues, that they didn't actually pay and participate in the program.
Well, I'm glad there's another opportunity, y'all. This weekend, it's the 27th, 28th, or 26th and 27th of February. We're coming right up to that. By the way, Super Don, I want to bring you into the mix. I want to transition, obviously, from the Ukraine. There's a great article that Jonathan has written about rights in Canada, rights in America, the difference. But Super Don, I know this, obviously, it concerns us all, the topic we've just covered. Is there anything you want to add or ask Jonathan about that before we move on to the next subject?
My camera froze, didn't it?
It did at freeze,
least
it
looks,
yeah.
It looks like I'm busy at work.
It does, doesn't it? You're probably napping. No, I know you're engaged in this one, so.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, this type of news is what I was, this is my roots, right? This is what I was trained for. And so I've been like actively following everything, glued to, you know, what's going on in the news ever since it began last night.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I mean, for me, I'm looking around. I'm doing the camera here as I'm talking.
Okay.
I'm looking around and I'm going, you know, how is this going to affect us here in the United States? That's my main concern. I know I brought this up last week, you know, when it looked like it was moving this direction. And I'm pretty sure, I haven't done it yet, but I'm pretty sure if I got my car and drove down to the gas station right now, I'd be willing to bet they've probably raised the price of gas by 30 cents already. Just because that's how gas stations do, right? But, you know, what I'm concerned about is, you know, that back in World War I, World War II, you know, each country had their own economies and stuff. We are such a global economy right now, and everybody's so, like, attached to each other that it's inevitable that what's going on over there is going to affect us here from an economic standpoint, all right? We've seen that, you know, the stock market, although stock markets aren't 100%, you know, I mean, they're going to take a tumble when something like this happens. And, you know, sometimes they recover, but who knows? You know, you got the stock market going down. You got price of oil, this, you know, hit a record. So we're looking at gas. We're looking at, you know, I mean, what else is going to affect us here at home? You know, we've got all these things that are going on right now. This is adding insult to injury with the economy that we've got going on right now. So my main concern is how do we prepare? I mean, it's like looking around. You can watch the news and stuff like that, but you know, what should we be doing at this point to try and make sure that we're going to be okay here at home?
Yeah, I think that the price of oil is going to go up significantly. The reason why that is there's sort of an interim effect that adds to it, but also Russia represents now about 7 to 10% of all oil and gas we use. And it may even be higher than that, but it's significant. It's 7 to 10%, and that has a pressure that's then exerted because the availability is cut off of that for at least a temporary period of time, and maybe indefinite if Russia so wishes. And in any event, the cost of it goes way up, and so as a result, we're going to see higher prices at the pump. We're going to see, I would imagine, across the nation, the cost of a gallon of gas will probably exceed $4 or $5 a gallon. The effect of that is going to be significant, because every penny you add to the cost of filling up your tank per gallon, when you look at it in the aggregate, is a huge financial hit, and it inflates the cost of all goods and services. So we're going to talk about a general rise of inflation, specifically as a result of what has happened in the Ukraine and the relationship between these parties and the availability of fuel. In Germany, access to Russian oil and gas represents about 30% of their fuel. And so their prices on everything they sell and export will go up. Likewise, throughout Europe.
So it creates a domino effect. I mean, it really does.
A domino effect. And so what's going to happen is that we're not only going to have our domestic manufacturers costing more and so forth, but that huge quantity of imports that we get from around the world, those things are going to cost more. And then we have the addition of the supply chain disruptions and so forth that are going to be aggravated by this situation as well. So, you know, I mean, look, you're going to have instances where people aren't going to be able to afford to go to work. They won't be able to buy gas. You're going to have instances where people aren't going to be able to afford air conditioning or heating. And this is real. And this is going to happen here in the United States.
And food costs are already jacked up.
Already now. Jacked up. And add to that fact that you've got all of these programs and regulations which are restricting the ability of the market to pivot and function and get around these things. So you've got, you know, Biden showing no remorse to the oil and gas industry, not allowing, you know, if you had a brain in your head, Biden, you would reverse your day one policies on energy. You would say, we're going to have the XL pipeline. We're going to open up gas and oil production in this country. We're going to use that to lower gas costs. What is he doing? He's thinking about maybe getting rid of the excise tax on gas. Maybe I'm going to open up the petroleum reserves and allow several, billion gallons of gas. That's all temporary. That's
a Band-Aid. Yeah, it's a Band-Aid.
Jonathan, has there been any evidence of Democratic Party rebellion to this agenda? Because they're going to end up slaughtered in the midterms. Not that I'd be unhappy about that, but you know what I'm saying? They got to realize this is a disaster for them as a party if they don't reverse course.
Well, you've seen individual governors bolting from the mask mandates, even in blue states. And you see certain members of Congress saying we ought to get rid of the mask mandates who are in blue states. You see Sinema, you see Manchin, who are Democrats, and they've become a thorn in the side. But at the same time, you see the AOC side, the far left side, using very draconian authoritarian tactics to attack and cancel any Democrat who dares raise his or her head above the parapet and say and call into question these measures to get rid of the fossil fuel economy or to in any way question their whole massive spending program. These, as you'll see at the State of the Union from Tlaib, when she gives her opposition comments, she's going to be full blown advocating these spending programs. She's going to get up there and say, hey, we need to pay for all of the all college debt. We need to get rid of that. Government needs to pay everybody's college debt.
Wait, are you saying Tlaib's going to do a Democrat rebuttal to Biden?
Yeah. She's going to do a Democrat rebuttal to Biden.
Wow.
Yeah, you watch. And they've already announced it. And here's the thing about that. Here's the thing about that.
Yeah.
This is showing you who the real power is, right? So Biden has given them so much power, but he's also from the very start sold his soul to the socialists and said, I'm going to give you your agenda. Now he's in this situation where if he tries to follow through with that, he's eviscerated in the 2022 elections. But By not advancing the agenda, and by he tried to and then it failed, but by not picking it up again and doing a Schumer thing and reintroducing it, and instead doing these superficial things that satisfy them with the one additional harmful thing like the appointment of the Supreme Court, he is taking he's going to take a hit from this far left side. So not only is he going to lose all the independents, a huge number of independents, and lose all of Democrats who are conservative, but he's also going to lose the far left too, because the far left, he sold his soul to them. He said, I'm going to get you what you want. He can't get what they want. And these people have no tolerance. These people are totally unforgiving. Mm-hmm. And these people want socialism now. Yeah. And he's not giving it to them. And now he can't.
Right.
Now he can't because the every time he moves in that direction, it's how are you going to, you're going to destroy the country. We've got to. And one of the things about this Ukraine thing that I think is a salutary thing arising out of it, it's forcing every American to really think about what's important. Mm-hmm. I mean, is woke politics important compared to the survival of your family and reducing inflation and getting the nation defended properly and being able to put up a real obstacle to communist China and its efforts to take over the world? I mean, what is important to you? And is it more important than your liberties? Are you willing to see the government of the United States force you to be in compliance with things you don't agree with? Are you willing to see your kids forced to accept as the only rational political position a woke position in favor of Marxism?
Got so soft because we didn't have to care for ourselves. I mean, everything was just basically, it's just right there. And that has caused us to just kind of, we had the ability to say, it doesn't matter, right? And now you find out it does. And now what do? Does everybody survive this? What's the pathway back? What's the recovery? Now, I want to go back and Super Don, thank you for adding that in, because that is the personal cost to each and every one of us all of these policies, right?
For the typical American, the thing that they're going to long remember, they may not remember per se that there was a Ukraine and that the Ukraine was taken over by Russia. But what they will remember is the weakness of a president who would not take steps that were staring them right in the face to lower their cost of living, but instead let inflation go wild. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to 2024, they're going to remember that. When you can't afford to put food on your table, when you can't afford to drive to work, when you can't afford to heat your house, and when you can't afford to air condition your house, and when your kids are suffering, and when you can't afford to take them on vacation, and you can't afford to give them any break despite all this COVID lockdown, shutdown, masking, and all that, people resent that deeply, and they don't forget it.
And that's why we have Marjorie Wildcraft on the show tomorrow talking about how to grow food at home, even if you don't know how. Because we need more independence. We need more what we used to call victory gardens. I've called them liberty gardens for many years, so that you're less vulnerable to those supply chain disruptions and even the cost of food made externally via Russian fertilizer. Oh, don't get me started on that. All right, Jonathan, you have an excellent article here. I want everybody to see it and read it and share it. We are live February 24th, 2022, for those of you listening, watching live, the Sacred Fire Liberty Edition with Jonathan E. Mord. And we have, let's see if we can find that article. Ah, The Fickle Nature of Canadian Rights. This has gone out, and you guys can republish it from Pajamas Media, PJ Media. This really goes into the heart of what I wasn't sure about with Canada, right? They talk about their rights of charters and freedoms. And we know here, because we discuss it extensively each week, Jonathan, almost a show doesn't go by when we're together. I don't talk about rights come from God, not government. And our founders understood that. They enshrined it into our documents to recognize and acknowledge that. But apparently, that's not the basis of Canadian law or their legislative action.
Right. We have Lockean origins in our politics here. I mean, that means that we start with the supposition that all people are entitled to rights, and that rights are bestowed upon them naturally by God and not from the state. In other words, we have pre-political rights. Even before the state existed, we had rights. When the state exists, we do not part with those rights. That's recognized in the 9th and 10th Amendments to the Constitution. Actually by the whole Constitution in design. And it was also expressly stated as a fundamental principle for our independence from Great Britain in the Declaration of Independence in the second paragraph.
Right. So, this is 18th century now. And then we talk about Canada, we go to 20th century, 1982, this Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Yeah. And so Canada, Benedict Arnold tried to invade Canada and liberate it from, cause it to take up arms against the British during the Revolutionary War, before he became a traitor. And that circumstance did not happen. They did not prevail in their attempt to do that. And so as a result, Canada remained under the British system of conception. And that conception in Canada resulted in a determination fundamentally by the 20th century that your rights are those things that come from Parliament, not from God. And Parliament and the legislatures of the provinces could determine whether or not what was described as a fundamental right in the Charter of Freedoms and Rights was available to you. And what they can do on any exigency where they consider it reasonable is suspend or deprive you of your rights in Canada, something that cannot happen in this country without you going to court and having your rights taken away because you've committed a crime or something to that effect. In Canada, they can just suspend or eliminate the rights. And they passed this Emergencies Act in Canada, which gives the Canadian Prime Minister the power to unilaterally take away the rights of the people. And that's what he did. He took away the rights of the people. He incarcerated them without due process, without the opportunity to appear before a magistrate. He stole their assets by freezing their bank accounts and drawing it down and sending it to Ottawa. He took their trucks, took their property away. He limited their freedom of employment, freedom to travel, and he destroyed their reputations. All of that he did to political enemies. They were peaceful protesters. He destroyed political enemies. He used the power, as a tyrant does, to destroy his political enemies. Now, he recently, I think today or yesterday, he withdrew the emergency that he declared, but apparently he did that in response to the threat that the Senate was not going to go along with him, the Canadian Senate. And so as a result, he withdrew it. Why did he withdraw it? Because it's still available to him. He can impose it again at any time. The thing about this is he can take away Canadians' rights whenever he wants. And all he has to do is say, these circumstances appear to me to justify an emergency.
Look, Jonathan, I mean, we're not Canadians here, but we really love and appreciate our friends and fans up there, and there are many. that really believe in the goodness that we have founded our nation on, you know, freedom from God, not government, and are waking up. Maybe they knew, maybe they didn't. Maybe now they know that their rights are subject to a politician removing them at the whim of an emergency. Now, I'm not saying that we haven't had problems here in the United States under the quote-unquote declared states of emergency regarding COVID. Because you can see the governments, particularly from blue states, but yes, there have been some red state activity that has been violative of the rights of the people, that even though they don't have the authority to suspend the Constitution, except in one tiny instance of habeas corpus, we go way back, but for the most part, it doesn't exist, and yet they've done it, I think, because the American people don't know how to fight back, push back, and say, ah, no, I will not comply, which would render all of their attempts moot.
Right. And when you have a rapacious administration like the Biden administration, where they impose mandates all over the place, right and left, it becomes a bit of a hard thing for people. But look, we had a whole bunch of corporations, a whole bunch of individuals resort to defend themselves in court. Many lost, but some won. And the ones who did win, won significantly. And the point is, we've reached a point now where Biden is basically, it's politically, he's incapable of maintaining these mandates. They're falling apart. And the reason is that we were able to use our rights to our advantage through the courts and succeed sufficiently to do that. We haven't always had that success. The Japanese were interned in World War II, gross violation of their liberty and their life and their property rights. By the federal government. And that was affirmed by the Supreme Court. So this struggle is very much ours as well as the Canadians. The difference is it is a powerful argument that we have that our rights come from God and that our rights are pre-political and that the state has no constitutional authority by which it can take it away. Well, Canada doesn't benefit from a written constitution like that. Canada does not benefit from its own charter of rights and freedoms because that is a creature of Parliament, and Parliament reserved right in the document itself the power to revoke it whenever the circumstances Parliament perceived to justify it. So you don't have any rights protection in Canada beyond what Parliament will allow. And when Parliament defers to a dictator like your present prime minister, you're out of luck. The Canadians' last resort is to vote that turkey out. But when you look at the polls, when some 70% of Canadians were determined, now this, I don't know the validity of the poll, but the poll appeared to be valid, said some 70% of Canadians endorsed what Trudeau did to the Freedom Convoy.
Yeah, if that's true, it's disappointing. I'm disappointed in that majority of Canadians. I don't know, again, if it's a valid poll, but we do know that their mainstream media, their legacy media, was like a suppressed media. There was no discussion of the, you know, the coverage that we saw of the dancing and singing and the bounce houses of kids in part and, you know, taking part in civil disobedience or at the very least saying, hey, you know what, we're protesting for rights that you are violating. That was not covered by their mainstream press.
But we shouldn't omit this fact that is very telling. So if you or I were president of the United States, and our neighbor to the north's prime minister was taking away the freedoms of Canadians,
we would have some words.
We would not only condemn it vocally, but we would also grant asylum to the Canadian people who are suffering the rights violations. Mm-hmm. We would give them asylum. We would say, come to this country. We will protect your rights. And we would say to Trudeau, if you don't knock this off, man, mm-hmm. We are going to impose upon your administration sanctions on you. We're going to freeze your accounts in the United States, and we're going to run you out like any tyrant would be run out.
The fact that that's not happening tells me that the Biden administration secretly is cheerleading that and wants that for themselves.
They are happy to oblige. In other words, they didn't say a word against it. They didn't show any sympathy or support for those who are advocating their rights by venting their views mm-hmm. against this tyrant. They didn't show any sympathy whatsoever for freedom. Not one bit. They themselves are imposing draconian mandates in this country. So why would they question another person who's doing it? And they would love to have had the power.
Exactly. That's the point.
I mean, they wanted to do that, remember? They wanted to fire every American who worked in a company that employed 100 or more people who would not bow down to them and get the
jab. And there was no discussion, no words against Australia and the government there when it was doing horrific things to the people there, including firing on them with rubber bullets and tanks. It's just nothing from the American president?
The Robert Scott Bell Show.